It's this week's installment of Teach Me What You Know, and we're going to learn how to win an argument.
Each week during Teach Me What You Know, we invite a guest to come on and teach us something new. Last week, we learned how to brew the perfect cup of coffee from a Milwaukee-area coffee expert.
This week, the director of debate at Marquette University is with us. Dave DeNomi will teach us, give us some advice on how to argue, how to make a good case while remaining civil. Dave, thanks for joining us.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, first, the skills of being persuasive aren't just used for actual arguments. How can they be used in our daily lives?
Well, it's funny you mention that, because as you were doing the lead-in, I was noticing you were talking about teaching people something new. And I think of debating and arguing as being something that we all already do. We do it with varying skills, skill levels. And sometimes we don't even realize we're doing it, of course, but I think everybody is doing it several times a day. And either they're trying to persuade somebody of something, or to make a decision favorable to their point of view, or they're listening to somebody else who's trying to do that with them. And it comes in many different forms, in things we read and see on television, in advertising, which is trying to make a case to get us to buy something. These are all forms of the same thing, building a persuasive case to change people's thoughts or to move them to an action.
Is there a basic rule for crafting an argument?
Well, I think one thing to always think of up front is you're best off knowing your facts well about whatever subject matter you're talking about, so that you either have the background knowledge already, or you do the research necessary to make sure that when you do get involved in an argument, that you're not caught with your facts being wrong. But as far as crafting an argument itself, there's a pretty similar format to how an argument works. And I think if you start recognizing it in your own life, you'll see it. You'll hear people make a claim. They'll say, "I think that you should be against this particular policy that the government has." Then after that, they need to give you a reason. And in debate, we call that a warrant, which makes sense. It warrants you to believe their claims. So the warrant part of the argument is where you really have the substance, where you will have backup that will provide evidence of one form or another that will help support that claim that you made originally. And then after you present that evidence, whether it's examples or documentary evidence or quotes from somebody, statistics possibly, then you come back around and you emphasize how that evidence you've just presented supports the claim that you made. So there's this basic claim warrant unit that you have in making an argument, a particular argument. Now, then you may have a complicated issue such as healthcare, where there are a series of different arguments, each with different claims and warrants, that then support an overall point of view, say in support of or against the Affordable Care Act. So, but that basic unit of argumentation is usually a kind of a claim warrant setup. And as you're listening, of course, you should watch for that.
And speaking of listening, I think a lot of us might focus on the parts that we say in the argument. How important is listening to the other person, the other side?
Oh, my gosh. It's probably at least, if not more important than how you speak. People think of arguing and debating as being an art of public speaking, and of course it is. But it's an art of listening combined with critical thinking, so that the best arguers, the best debaters, are going to be those that are really tuned in to what the people on the other side are saying or what people in the audience are asking, and they are going to be able to adapt their argumentation to what they're hearing. If all you're doing is going in with your own canned information and just blurting it at people and repeating it, you really aren't going to get far in convincing people and winning an argument that has an evolution to the process of debating it.
Now, what about sort of the stuff that's less obvious? Not so much what you say, but how you say it. Things like your body posture, your tone of voice. How important are things like those?
Those are pretty critical, I would say. I think you always adapt according to the type of audience you're dealing with, whether it's a small group in a meeting, whether it's a large forum. You'll change those kinds of things. But really, I think that what most often comes across best to people is a common sense sounding tone of voice that stays at a reasonable level. I think that when people get heated, that then people start to think that the person is becoming less rational. So I think it's really important that you keep your tone at a straight level, as well as you're respectful to your opponent, that you don't use a sarcastic tone of voice, that you keep it at a level that's respectful of those you disagree with.
Here's maybe a zany question. Outside of a competitive debate format, are we hurting ourselves by going into an argument by thinking about how to win it, as opposed to, I guess, an exchange of ideas?
That's very true, and that is where the format of what you're doing is very different. And a lot of times you're involved in a meeting where you're with other people you're collaborating with, and you may make a point, but as you're listening to them, you may be persuaded that there's elements of truth in what they're talking about. And I think that there's real value in those types of situations of being able to use those listening skills to possibly change your thoughts and change your opinions. And I think that we have to not be afraid to be able to do that. I think that that's, it's not a zany question at all, because I think that that gets to the heart of a lot of what's a problem in our current format for public discourse in our country.
You can't do that if you're a student in a debate, right? If you just throw in the towel, that's not acceptable.
Certainly not. Certainly not. You maintain your side to the end. And, of course, in that sort of format, it's always set up where you have teams on one side or the other, and your goal is not at all to convince the other team. It's to convince the judges sitting in the back of the room to vote for you. So it's certainly not a conciliatory activity by any means. I would not be advising my debaters to go in and give up the round and walk out before they tried their best.
Well, but are there times where you're in a competitive format or outside of that where you say, you know, I've got to concede that point and move on? How do you do that, admit defeat on that one sub point without giving up the whole argument?
Sometimes what you do in the process of the argumentation is you may openly concede a point, but more often what you'll do is just turn to the other points that you have that are stronger, trying to emphasize those. Possibly, if you can do it, you may want to minimize what we refer to as the impact of an argument. And people do this, I think, by nature, that they'll say, well, I understand what you're saying about this issue, but really to me what's more important is this aspect over here, and that aspect is one that you're more comfortable of being able to win the argument with. So you're sort of saying, yes, that's fine, I can't say you're wrong on that, but I'm saying it's not really that important. So you're minimizing the impact in that sense.
When you are pointing your students toward someone who's inspiring when it comes to being a masterful debater, who do you look to who's in the public sphere?
I would say President Clinton was always very impressive to me in his ability to put his perspective on issues out there in a very thoughtful way that engaged his opponents, and I think really represented his perspective well. So I always was impressed when I watched a speech. I guess I don't as often look towards too many political figures as far as debates, because of what we're seeing with the media format of debates and how they're held. I just am not seeing examples out there that I would hold up as shining examples. I think President Obama is very skillful. I think that he is good at connecting with audiences. I think probably there are people in all parts of the spectrum that can connect with their audience. It's hard to reach across And I think that's where the media aspect and the whole circus of politics fueled a lot by money and commercials makes it difficult to have a lot of rational discourse and really engaging debate about issues. So not that there aren't good debates out there. I just guess I don't look for them as much as the political realm, as much as I look, for instance, among the international debate circuit that we now are part of. And you hear a lot of people from other countries as well that have different perspectives through these debates that are available online. So we use a lot of those to train our debaters because people are really engaged in interesting argument, and it's less of a sort of political show going on.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking me.
We've been speaking with Dave DeNomi for this week's installment of Teach Me What You Know. He's the director of debate at Marquette University.